You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and insightful daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and refined product markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the U.S. energy landscape.
Wednesday, March 18, 2026. Me and Mrs. Jones, White House issues Jones Act waiver, but market impact could be limited. Published by Lisa Scheidler. The White House issued a 60-day waiver of the Jones Act on March 18 that will allow foreign flag tankers to move crude oil and refined products between U.S. ports in a bid to cool gasoline prices. It's a technical move, which will certainly impact how crude and products flow, but the influence on prices might not be enough to notice through the significant noise of overall market swings. In today's RBN blog, we'll dive into what the Jones Act waiver could mean for U.S. refiners, consumers, and other market participants. The Jones Act, formerly Section 27 of the Merchant Marine Act of 1920, requires that cargo moving between U.S. ports travel on vessels that are U.S.-built, U.S.-owned, U.S.-flagged and primarily U.S.-crewed. The post-World War I law was designed to protect the domestic shipbuilding industry and to ensure a reliable U.S. merchant fleet for national defense and emergency response. In the energy sector, the Jones Act fleet breaks down into five main vessel types: smaller inland barges that typically carry about 10,000 barrels or 30,000 barrels of crude or refined products on rivers and coastal canals; regional offshore tank barges, such as those in New York Harbor, with capacities of 50,000 barrels to 135,000 barrels; coastal barges, including larger articulated tug barges, or ATBs, with capacities of roughly 142,000 barrels to more than 320,000 barrels; product and crude tankers that run in coastal and international trades and generally carry around 330,000 barrels; and large crude tankers dedicated to the Alaskan trade. Back in 2013-14, a run-up in demand for Jones Act tankers and ATBs and a spike in time charter rates spurred orders for new vessels. By the time the new tankers were built and launched, however, demand for them had fallen off. That decline was mostly due to the mid-decade slump in U.S. crude oil production and, with the lifting of the ban on most U.S. crude exports in late 2015, the drop in crude shipments from one U.S. port to another. Term charter rates plummeted and shipowners stopped ordering new tankers and large ATBs. According to Bloomberg and RBN data, there are currently about 101 Jones Act-eligible ships in the market today. That number was as high as 400 ships in 1950, with the count largely flat but edging lower over the past decade. The requirements the Jones Act imposes on ships operating between U.S. ports add costs, including less favorable economies of scale at U.S. shipyards and reduced competition among U.S. shipbuilders, resulting in higher construction costs and higher wages and insurance costs for Jones Act workers. Those higher costs have reduced the number of ships built for coastwise and non-contiguous movement of crude oil. The relatively small size of the U.S. flagged fleet, along with increased competition for Jones Act vessels, has resulted in higher charter costs and shipping fees. Charter costs and shipping fees, of course, are key factors in determining whether transporting crude on a Jones Act vessel makes economic sense in a particular situation. Because of the added costs, the Jones Act shapes the movement of crude and products between U.S. coasts and refineries. You might want to take a look at Figure 1 in today's blog, which shows the routes Jones Act qualified barges and tankers take to move barrels between ports such as Corpus Christi, Houston, New York Harbor, and the West Coast. The pink dashed line illustrates foreign flag tankers that transport barrels of Gulf Coast crude through international waters to destinations like eastern Canada. As this route is less costly than complying with Jones Act restrictions, these barrels could be refined and re-exported to the U.S. Moving from the Gulf Coast to the East Coast on a direct Jones Act path is typically a shorter trip, for example, but often more expensive per barrel than longer foreign flagged routes via Canada or the Panama Canal. We'll note that by far the largest Jones Act refined product movements occur between various Gulf Coast ports and destinations on both coasts of Florida, greater than 700,000 barrels per day, which aren't served by pipelines, see our recent fuel blog. WTI crude oil at Cushing, Oklahoma, mostly traded in a $55 to $65 per barrel range in January and February, and settled at $67.02 per barrel on February 27, the last trading day before the attacks against Iran began. Prices have moved steadily higher, reaching $98.71 per barrel on March 13, up 47% from the start of the month. Similar movement has been seen with gasoline prices. According to AAA, The national average price of regular gasoline rose from just under $3 per gal in late February to about $3.50 per gal by mid-March and climbed to nearly $3.85 per gal as of March 18. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt said in a social media post on March 18 that the administration's decision to issue a 60-day Jones Act waiver is just another step to mitigate the short-term disruptions to the oil market during the military conflict. She added, "This action will allow vital resources like oil, natural gas, fertilizer, and coal to flow freely to U.S. ports for 60 days, and the administration remains committed to continuing to strengthen our critical supply chains." In addition to waiving the Jones Act, other efforts are underway to reduce gas costs. On March 11, the International Energy Agency, or IEA, announced that its 32 member countries had unanimously agreed to release up to 400 million barrels from their emergency reserves to help ease supply disruptions tied to the war in the Middle East. As discussed in RBN's weekly crude billboard report, with IEA members collectively holding over 1.2 billion barrels of emergency stockpiles, this is the largest coordinated draw in the agency's history, eclipsing the 183 million barrels release in 2022 following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. As part of a global response, the U.S. said it would release 172 million barrels of crude oil from its Strategic Petroleum Reserve, or SPR. For more, see Big Time. How a waiver could be executed. Jones Act waivers announced by the White House are implemented by the Department of Homeland Security, or DHS, and U.S. Customs and Border Protection, or CPB, but the precise scope of cargo and routes, and how this 60-day period will be structured, will not be clear until the detailed implementation document is posted to the public dockets. Most recently, after Hurricane Fiona in 2022, the Biden administration approved a temporary waiver allowing one foreign flagged tanker carrying about 300,000 barrels of diesel to deliver fuel to Puerto Rico, easing concerns about generator supplies. In 2017, during Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico, President Trump authorized and DHS issued a 10-day waiver covering goods shipped to the island to support emergency relief. During Hurricanes Harvey and Irma in 2017, a temporary waiver was also granted, allowing foreign ships to carry refined petroleum products, including gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel, from the Gulf Coast to the East Coast. In 2005, DHS issued an 18-day waiver allowing foreign flag tankers to move petroleum and petroleum products between U.S. ports after Gulf Coast pipelines and refineries were disrupted by Hurricane Katrina, followed by a similar waiver after Hurricane Rita a few weeks later. With the White House announcing a 60-day suspension of Jones Act restrictions, the uncertainty around the timing has cleared, but the scope still matters a lot. The White House said the waiver is aimed at facilitating movements of key energy cargoes, but it remains unclear how DHS and CBP will translate that into the fine print. Under 46 U.S.C. 501, the President's determination can be implemented through shorter, vessel and cargo-specific waivers in roughly 10-day chunks, subject to overall duration limits for a given emergency, or via broader notices that provide more blanket relief. But we have not yet seen how DHS and CBP will structure the waiver in practice. Even with roughly 2 months of relief, refiners and shippers have commercial and logistical commitments set well in advance, so only some flows are likely to be re-optimized around foreign flagged vessels during this period. Also, while the Jones Act does add additional cost to coastwise moves, the actual magnitude of those costs is hard to measure, and given the current extreme volatility in the underlying market prices, it would likely be hard to even see at the pump. We'll continue to follow this closely and update once the DHS-CBP publishes the implementation documents that spell out more details. For refiners, the Jones Act mostly shows up as a freight cost and market access problem. It makes it more expensive to move crude and products between the U.S. coasts, which can prop up East Coast prices and cap how many barrels from the Gulf Coast can flow there. Dropping that coastwise premium could widen the outlet for Gulf Coast barrels and help refinery economics there, making it easier and cheaper to push more light crude and products into domestic coastal markets rather than exports. For East Coast refiners, it's more of a double-edged sword. Their costs might improve with more Gulf Coast light sweet crude potentially able to move coastwise at lower cost, but competition from Gulf Coast refineries on the product side would also intensify. A very recent development in U.S. regional product flows, which might have the most immediate impact from the Jones Act waiver, is the two-step movement of gasoline blend stocks from Gulf Coast refineries to the Bahamas on foreign flagged vessels, where a very modest manufacturing blending operation takes place and then is reshipped to U.S. West Coast markets. That manufacturing step at an intermediate foreign port allows the entire move to be done on foreign flagged vessels without running afoul of Jones Act rules. In 2025, An average of 22,000 barrels per day of gasoline blend stocks made this voyage, with the last 3 months of the year averaging 38,000 barrels per day, versus just over 1,000 barrels per day in 2024. The shutdown of refining capacity in California has led to this development, and demand for additional gasoline movements into the West Coast market has grown further this year following the recent closure of Valero's Benicia, California, refinery in February. A Jones Act waiver could immediately forego the need to make the trip to the Bahamas and would allow a lower-cost direct shipment of gasoline from the Gulf Coast to the West Coast. Note, Jones Act vessels aren't even available at this time for this voyage, so there is no current substantive opposition to this specific waiver. Before we close, we should note another government policy that impacts fuel prices, the Renewable Fuel Standard, or RFS program. This very complex policy, which mandates that refiners include specified minimum amounts, on a percentage basis, of renewable components, ethanol, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel, or SAF, into their overall production, adds significantly more costs at the pump than any other government program, including the Jones Act. It's a subject covered extensively in our Future of Fuels report, including forecast costs, and will also be included in an upcoming blog post. Me and Mrs. Jones was written by Kenny Gamble, Leon Huff, and Kerry Gilbert. It appears as the fourth song on side one of Billy Paul's fourth studio album, 360 Degrees of Billy Paul. The song is a slow scorcher of a soul ballad about an extramarital affair between a man and his lover, Mrs. Jones. Released as a single in September 1972, it reached number one on the Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart and was certified gold by the Recording Industry Association of America, RIAA. It was Paul's only number one single. It has been inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame. The song has appeared in numerous television shows and motion pictures, and has been covered by Freddie Jackson, Michael Bublé, and The Dramatics. Personnel on the record were Billy Paul, vocals, Bobby Ely, Norman Harris, guitars, Ron Baker bass, Eddie Green, Leon Huff, piano, Earl Young, drums, Vincent Montana Jr., vibraphone, percussion, and Don Rinaldo, string arrangements. 360 Degrees of Billy Paul was recorded at Sigma Sound in Philadelphia in 1972. It was produced by Gamble and Huff and released in October 1972. It went to number 1 on the Billboard Top Soul and number 17 on the Billboard 200 Albums charts and has been certified gold by the RIAA. Two singles were released from the LP. Billy Paul, Paul Williams, was an American soul singer. He began singing at 11, appearing on the Philadelphia radio station WPEN. He started singing in nightclubs in the area when he was 16 and released his first single, Why Am I, on Jubilee Records in April 1952. He teamed up with Gamble and Huff and became a part of the Philly sound in 1968. He released 12 studio albums, a compilation album, and 37 singles. He won an American Music Award and a Grammy Award. Paul died in April 2016 in Blackwood, New Jersey, at 81.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.